Friends, a mighty cry has arisen in our land. Let there be justice. Loud voices shout for justice for Michael Brown, others for Darrell Wilson. In the midst of all this turmoil, there are a great many who are asking, what is this justice that's being called for? Is it simply that the law of the land be followed according to the facts determined? Or is it something far broader and deeper, as the respect of every human being that we profess in the baptismal covenant? Is this present moment a call to deal with wider issues such as failing schools, lack of access to good health and good jobs? And finally, are we Christians responding to all of this as we stand in the tradition of Moses and the prophets and Jesus and the apostles? Or are we standing here blinded by the hype of the media and deafened by all the shouting? Well, today we celebrate Christ the King Sunday with its triumphant theme and hymns, as well as its dark warnings of a judgment day to come. What I want to do this morning is to focus on our Old Testament lesson from the prophet Ezekiel and its ties to our gospel lesson of Jesus' vision of the division of the sheep and the goats on Judgment Day. And finally, I want to finish with some thoughts on how these lessons might apply and shed light on the momentous events that we're caught up in. Well, I suspect I'm pretty safe in saying that most of us don't know a whole lot about the book of the prophet Ezekiel, other than his famous vision of dry bones coming together or the fiery chariot coming down to get him. Well, he was a priest in Jerusalem who was part of the first great wave of deportations of Jews to Babylon in 597 BC. And 4 years later, he had a vision where the hand of God came down and rested on him, calling him to prophesy to his fellow Jews in exile. And for 24 chapters, Ezekiel, speaking for God, hammers the kings of Judah and the people of Judah for all the sins that led to their captivity in Babylon. And he warned them over and over again, don't count on God rescuing you. In fact, he told them that the exile was God's doing. The past kings of Judah he called bad shepherds, who had terribly misled them into idolatry and oppression of the poor. But you know what? Those first captives didn't believe him. Has not God promised us that we are the favorite people and he will favor us as his chosen forever? So finally, in 586, the weak king left behind in Jerusalem foolishly rebelled against the Babylonians, and they had it. And they came and they destroyed the whole city, burned down the temple, ruined the fields around the city, and carted off most of the remaining inhabitants. Ezekiel's prophecies had come true, and now everybody was listening. And so his prophecies change 180 degrees around. Speaking through the prophet, God is now telling these despondent people that unlike the faithless and corrupt past kings of Judah, they now have a new shepherd king in town. And it is God himself who will seek out the lost, bring back the strayed, bind up the injured, and strengthen the sick. And when the flock would be reassembled, this new shepherd king would feed them with justice. We can imagine that when those exiles heard this, the 23rd Psalm was ringing in their ears. And ever since, Christians hearing Ezekiel's prophecy surely have thought of the Good Shepherd imagery in the 10th chapter of John, or Matthew's vision of the separation of the sheep and the goats in today's gospel lesson. Now, with all of this imagery of shepherds and sheep, it's easy for that business of them being fed with justice to slip by us. But a great many of the Psalms are on this very subject, proclaiming, like the one we read today, proclaiming God, King of all the gods, but also that we are God's people, not only the people of his hand, but also the sheep of his pasture. But the question is, what kind of shepherd king is God whom we worship? Psalm 99 tells us, O mighty king, lover of justice, you have established equity. You have executed justice and righteousness in Jacob. Well, again, what might this justice be? What would it look like in practice? Well, we're told in Psalm 82 and many other places, God judges justly, does not favor the wicked. He saves the weak and the orphan, defends the humble and needy, rescues the weak and the poor, and delivers them from the power of the wicked. My friends, that's the real shepherd king. That's the food of justice he feeds his sheep. So, in the light of that, we turn to Jesus' great vision of Judgment Day in Matthew 25. The Son of Man, which is Jesus's one of his favorite descriptions or references to himself, when the Son of Man comes in glory, he will sit on his throne and announce to all the nations before him the basis on which he is to judge all of the world. And it will be whether or not they fed him when he was hungry, gave him drink when he was thirsty, clothed him when he was naked, welcomed him when he was a stranger, and visited him in prison. Now, it's interesting, both the sheep and the goats are surprised. The sheep, who have been told that they've done all these things, and the goats have been told they have done none of these things, all ask, when did we do this or not do this? And the Son of Man says, when you did or did not do it to the least of these. Presumably to those who are most vulnerable and oppressed that were standing before him in the midst of all the nations. Well, what does this have to do with the momentous events swirling around us? And how are we to respond to them? I want to propose something to you, that it begins, at least at first, it begins with a question of imagination. Both Ezekiel and Jesus are calling on us to envision a world whose values are radically different from those of ours. Counterculture, if you will. So here are the words of a contemporary novelist and spiritual writer that I like a lot, Kathleen Norris. I quote, "If we're to act as if Christ is in other people, even the stranger whom we believe we have reason to fear, the prisoner whose acts are reprehensible, the sick we'd rather condemn because we're convinced that their lifestyle has contributed to their illness, and the hungry who should have been able to fend for themselves, if we cannot recognize Christ in those people, what we have, to paraphrase the prison guard in Cool Hand Luke, is a failure to imaginate." having been unable to see what God has placed in front of us, we cannot now act on what we have not seen. Let me read that again, a little convoluted, but very important. Having been unable to see what God places in front of us, we cannot now act on what we have not seen. She goes on, the exercise of our imaginations is vital if we are to find Christ in other people. And this is the heart of the matter. The human imagination, battered and torn by our fears and limitations, comes from God, from a God who asks us to see ourselves and the world in a new way. How we choose to return this remarkable gift from God back to God is entirely up to us. End of quote. So, my friends, we need, our society needs help, big time help, in reimagining the choices before us. We all need help in seeing the conditions required for justice and peace to reign over our land. And that, I believe, will happen only when we can envision and act upon ways in which everyone in our land will have access to good education, health care, and employment, access that very few of us personally lack. And that can only happen when we leaven our passion for legal justice with a good measure of love for those most vulnerable in our land. My friends, we are at a crucial, important moment in our country's history, and I pray that we Christians will not sit idle. At the end of this service, we will sing a hymn to send us out, in which we will call on the God of grace and glory to grant us wisdom and courage for the facing of this hour, for the living of these days, lest we miss God's kingdom's goal, and so that we may serve the one whom we adore. To that, all I can add is Amen.